Tonight's exhortation will be presented by Brother Larry Fletcher. He does not have any scripture reading, so without further ado, Brother Larry Fletcher.
Go along with Brother Robbie, and I don't know how you up from North Hill Rock. It's talking about Grady's from North Hill Rock, from me and my wife and daughter. It's been a great week so far, first few days, and we've really enjoyed the classes. Kind of to go along with what Murray kind of hurt my conscience. It was a couple of weeks ago that Bill called me and asked if I'd give an exhortation. And I wasn't as gung-ho as it sounded like Murray was. I want to thank Bill and all the Henderson Ecclesia for putting this on, because it's been a great week so far, like I said. This was a couple of weeks ago that I was trying to think of what to speak about, what I want to talk about tonight. I tried to come up with a title, and I'm not good with titles. But what I'd like to talk about is just two things. I want to keep it simple, because we've had a lot of information from these very smart brethren, and I'm going to simple it down a little bit. And what I want to talk about is I want to define one term, and I want to talk about one person. That term being pride. But what is pride? Just a simple definition. Pride, a feeling of deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements. The achievements of those with whom one is closely associated with are from qualities or possessions that are widely admired. So just note the words in this definition. Feeling, pleasure, possessions, and especially one's own achievements. It's from a Strong's word. I'm not going to try to pronounce the words, because I can't pronounce normal language, much less Hebrew. That means arrogancy, excellency, majesty, pomp, pride, proud, swell. And it's from two words. That means you mount up in arrogance. So that gives us a good idea of what pride is. And we all know from Scripture that pride is never, or almost never, I don't think it's ever used in a good way in Scripture. And I've often said that I think all sin is a result of pride in one way or another. We know the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. But I think those first two also can be related to pride. Now, the word pride first occurs in the King James Version in Leviticus 26:19. And it states, "And I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass." So this is Yahweh warning the nation that is coming out of Egypt at Mount Sinai through Moses. And it's warning them before they go into the land to follow God's commandments, not to bow down to idols, as we can see in Leviticus 26:1-13. If they would be faithful, then they would grow and eat abundantly. They would live safely in peace. They would be strong and confident as a people and a nation. God would watch over them, and God would keep them. In Leviticus 26:9, it says, "For I will have respect unto you." Of course, this Hebrew for that respect is to turn his face towards them. So I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. Yahweh would be their God, and they would be his people, as we read in 26:12. Now if they failed to listen, and if they failed to follow God's commandments, they would live in terror, sickness, sorrow, their food would fail, and Yahweh would be against them. They would be punished completely, as it says in Leviticus 26:18, as it says 7 times more. And God would break their pride, as it says in verse 19. Here we might have an insight as to why they failed. Pride. I will break what causes your failure to hearken unto my words, that being your pride of life. We know that term is often used and referred to as in John 2:16, and we've already kind of said those three sins. We read in 1 John chapter 2 that the pride of life is of the world. And because of the love of the world, it may be said that this pride of life is the rejection of God in the pursuit for the love of the world. Stating it another way, to make a point, it's like saying, I choose the world over God. I love the world and hate God. It seems kind of strong. But love of the world and love of God are mutually exclusive. As 1 John 2:15 says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And again in 1 John in chapter 3, verse 1, behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. And again in John 15:19, if you were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hated you. Now we could go on, and we know that there's many, many verses that touch on this point. Thinking about it, just within just a relatively short number of chapters within Genesis, there's another number of significant happenings that affect the world, or affected the world at the time, and affects us today. This is just 3 accounts that I just pulled up out of my head just to make a point. One of them is the account of Cain and Abel, and Cain's reaction to the Lord not having regard for his offering. Another one might be the flood in Noah's day because of the wickedness of man. And then just within just a few chapters within Genesis, the scattering of the population in battle because of the people wanting to make a name for themselves. Just think about Cain. We read in 4:5 of Genesis, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. Speaking of Yahweh having not respect for his offering. And Cain was very wroth. This word means to glow or grow warm. Figuratively, to blaze up of anger, zeal, jealousy. And his countenance fell. Think of Noah in his day in Genesis 6:12. It says, God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. The word means decay. For all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And then the last one that we mentioned was Babel in Genesis 11:4. And they said, go, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make a name, or Shem, an appellation as a mark or memorial, individually, by implication, honor, authority, character, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So was it not Cain's pride that was pricked by God's displeasure in his offering? Didn't the men of Noah's day reject the way of the Lord in choosing their own thoughts in a prideful way? And in the case of Babel, didn't the men of that day want to make a name for themselves in rejection of Yahweh's name out of pride? Again and again in history of mankind, we see him leaning to his own understanding and choosing his own way, elevating himself above those around him and looking to his own achievements, even thinking to himself to be above his own creator. In 1 Samuel 2 and 3, it says, "Talk no more so exceedingly proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." In Proverbs 3 and 7 says, "Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil." You know, I can't remember which class it was, but someone mentioned that not to be egocentric, but instead be God-centered. In each one of these cases, we see that as being egocentric. When considering our own situation in the world in which we live, it brings to my mind Abram's nephew, Lot, and his life. We often hear pointed out when considering Lot that he sat in the gate of Sodom when the angels of God came to him. Adding to this that he chose the land in the plain of Jordan, close by Sodom and Gomorrah. Now the point of this is often suggesting that these observations is that Lot was participating as a judge of the day in the society of Sodom, and that he chose his path, and this led to his family's downfall. Now, in all the examples that we have in Scripture of righteous men and wicked men, where does Lot fall? What do we think of when we think of Lot? We usually don't turn to Lot as an example to us to follow. But as we see, he's not on the wicked side either. So how did he end up here? At one point, he was prosperous, traveling with his uncle Abram, with so many livestock that the land was unable to bear them all. In Genesis 13:6, it says, "Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together." So at this point of his life, he was blessed by God. He was not dwelling in cities. And it was really Abram who suggested that they part ways. And it was because of the quarreling of the herdsmen, as we well know. And in Genesis 13, if we read, starting with verse 1, that, "And then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, to the south. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will take the right. Or if you go to the right, I will go to the left. know that Lot chose the well-watered plains, presumably for his livestock, for his herdsmen, to make it easy on their work that they had to do. It was well-watered. What happened? How long was it between when Abram and Lot separated and the destruction of Sodom in which he lived? In Genesis 12:4, we're told that Abram was 75 years old when he departed Haran. They then part ways after an unknown amount of time. And they traveled through Egypt and to the southern, and some say to the northern area of the Dead Sea. My wife showed me an article the other day where they had evidence where they found the actual city of Sodom, and it was to the north of the Dead Sea. Really doesn't matter as far as what we're speaking of today. But so, note that even at the time of their separation, Sodom was a wicked nation, as we see in Genesis 13:13. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. So, given the choice, Lot chose the plain near the city. Thinking about the choice, if Lot had chosen the western side, would Abraham have gone to the east and just stayed clear of Sodom? We don't know. So after parting from Lot towards the west, Yahweh's promises were restated to Abram in Genesis 13:14-18. And it says, "And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from you, lift up your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, which is the way Lot went, and westward, for all the land which you see I will give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also can be numbered. Arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I will give it to you." And we had that in our class this morning. So next in Lot's life, we see the Confederate kings come down and take him captive, both him and his city and the kings and all the goods. Now it's told to Abram, and he rescues Lot and all his kings and all the goods with his own men. We can turn to Genesis 14:14 and see that, "And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left side of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people." Of course, we know that right after this is where Abram communes with Melchizedek. So we've considered the question as to how long it was from the time of Abram and Lot separating to the time of the destruction of the cities. And then again ask, what happened in Lot's life during this period of time? So when trying to establish a timeline, when you look to Genesis 16:3, read it, "And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan," so that 10 years is our time period, "and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife." So Abram had been in the land, whatever that means, for 10 years when Sarah gave Hagar to Abram to make offspring. Now, I don't know whether this means 10 years from the time that he left Haran or 10 years from the separation. Abram was 86 at the time, as we read in Genesis 16:15-16, And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his name, son's name, which Hagar bore, Ishmael. And Abram was fourscore and 6 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. So next we have in the timeline of Abram being 99 years old in Genesis 17:1. When the Lord again appeared to him with the covenant of circumcision and the seed promised through Sarah, and his name being changed to Abram, as we see in Genesis 17:5 and 16. It was then that the Elohim, on their way to the destruction of Sodom, again repeat the promise of the seed through Sarah, resulting in her laughter. So in Genesis 18:1, it reads, "And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Manan, and he sat in the tent of the Lord in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door, and bowed himself toward the ground. And the Lord said unto Abram, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child, which am of old?" Take note, which is interesting, because I was thinking about this when we were listening to the family classes this morning, that in Genesis 18:19, the statement by the Elohim that Abraham will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord. Just keep that in mind as we think about Lot and his situation. So at this point, Abraham bargains with the Elohim concerning the destruction of Sodom, possibly because he knew his nephew Lot dwelt there and knew him to be righteous. So it was a minimum of approximately 13 years, as Abraham was 86 when Ishmael was born, to as long as about 24 years, from the time when Lot separated from Abram and went down to the plain near Sodom, and when it was destroyed. So 13 to 25 years, somewhere in there, that Lot was in that area. So we ask again, what happened to Lot in this period of time to bring him to this situation? Now, for our consideration at this time, let's assume that Lot didn't choose the land to the east out of pure selfishness or to get one over on Abram. That just maybe the land to the west was also well watered and good. It doesn't really say. Given the choice by Abram, he chose that which fit the needs of his livestock and those men that kept him, to the best of his knowledge at the time. Now, we're not told whether or not Abram and Lot knew the wickedness of Sodom. We know that God states that they were wicked. Over the course of the next decade or two, he had been taken captive in war and in rescue. And I've heard it suggested many times that this may be why he moved into the city, is for the protection of the city. Was he still wealthy with much goods and livestock, as it said before? Or had he lost his wealth or given it up for the perceived protection of the city? At what time did he marry? There's no mention of his wife until the angel's time. In Genesis 19:15, was his wife taken from the area or even from Sodom, the city of Sodom? And were her daughters born after he went into the city? So they were products of the city of Sodom. Maybe he was working to make a living and raise his family the best he could, considering the circumstances. His wife was drawn to the city, and his daughters that had been born, most likely in Sodom, had future husbands and a life ahead of them. He had to be in the world while trying his best not to be of the world. So many of these questions we are just not told and can only speculate. Yet does any of this sound familiar, the choices that he made? When thinking on these things, I ask myself, do I always make the best choices for my spiritual health and that of my family? Does the society in which we live wear and toil on my conscience? We could say that Lot could move out into the country. He could move out. We could say the same thing ourselves when we get into situations within the cities that we live in. We could move out into the middle of nowhere and be by ourselves. Yet we don't do that. Am I willing to ignore what happens around me for my comfort or pleasure, to my detriment, and that of my family? Like we said before, we don't look to Lot for inspiration or support. Rather, we seem to turn to David or Moses or a number of others that had flaws but overcame them to follow Yahweh. After this past month, or last month, I would say, I have thought strongly that we are locked. That the circumstances surrounding Lot are eerily similar to our own position in society today. Just as Sodom is used often in Scripture to symbolize adultery, wickedness, we may look to Lot as typical of the believer in wicked surroundings. The world around us sure seems a lot like Sodom, with us dwelling in the midst of it, trying to make the best of our choices that are presented to us, striving to work within the society around us, and to keep ourselves separate and remain separate from the actions of those around us, thinking that our situation is bad, but is it really better somewhere else? Unsure at times how to endure the pressures upon us, at times making mistakes that brings about situations that are not good for us or our families. The world around us has always been evil, from the days of Adam's fall, just as Sodom was when Lot settled nearby. Yet we can clearly see our own eyes, with our own eyes, the rapid decay of society around us. How can we hide from those that relentlessly push the lawless ideas towards us and our families? Think about what went on last month and the word they used to describe themselves. It is in our workplaces. It is in our children's schools. It is in front of the stores that we go in to shop to. It is in once fairly harmless entertainment, such as baseball. It is targeting our children above all. It is forcibly being accepted by both government and private businesses. Are we diligently striving to keep it from becoming normalized in our thinking? And that's what scares me the most, is the young people and it being pushed the way it is, that it will become just normal. Think about, we were talking I think yesterday, or maybe this morning, how much has changed in the last couple of decades. Are we still repulsed when we see or hear? Do we tell our children and our friends that we do not accept it and it is not right? Are there unlawful deeds vexing our souls day to day? The month of pride may be over, but the evil that promotes it surely is not. Was the account that we spoke of this morning about Sodom or about the man Lot? Now, I don't believe for a minute that any of us purposefully make decisions that we know will destroy our own spiritual welfare or those around us or that of our families. That's why we're here today, this week, to be together with those of like mind. Calling upon God in prayer to help strengthen us both in our decisions, in our situations we put ourselves in. Knowing that the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. Just to kind of go off on a tangent. I think I have time. Sam spoke. I was thinking when Sam was talking about him going into a job and working under an older gentleman. I think it was Sam. Thinking that he didn't have the urgency or the... He had patience, whereas Sam, I think this is the way it was put, that Sam was not patient, and this old man was patient, and he didn't have that much time left. And the way he said that, I thought, that's interesting. Thinking about our lives. I retired two years, 2 months, and 1 day. Knocked down the count. I worked for a circuit company for almost 40 years. They were building a new building as I was retiring, and they were moving into this new building. And I was training the person that was going to take my spot. All the things that were in that place of work were going into the dumpster because they didn't need them anymore. All the things that I'd worked on all those many years were gone. It didn't mean anything in the full sense of it. We were talking about road work. We were doing, you know, somebody built a road 40 years ago. Where's that road today? It's gone. It's not even there. Nothing's permanent in this world. When you see Ryan Fisker was talking about cleaning out his father's house, taking the things out of his house that meant so much to his father and putting it into the dumpster. Al paints beautiful pictures he was showing me of these rusty trucks in the fields. Just think, at one time, there was some gentleman or lady that went to the dealership, paid all they had to buy that old truck, or it was new at the time, who was so proud of that truck. And now you see them in the fields rusting away, or moths destroyed. So let's conclude by turning to... Well, to keep, before we do that, to keep on the theme that I think was started the other morning about a hymn, the hymn that I want to reference is not in the books that we're using. So, But I think everybody here is familiar with the hymn, and it kind of goes with Lot, along with Lot, and what we've been talking about this morning. I'm just going to read the verses, because it's not very long. It's only four stanzas, I think. Who was saved when heaven's vast fountains did their flood and death begin, and all flesh on the plains and mountains perished in the awful sin? Only Noah, in the ark by God shut in. Who was saved from the direst horror at that unexpected hour, wherein Sodom and Gomorrah sank overwhelmed to rise no more? Lot the faithful, he alone was removed to Zoar. Who was saved when desolation fell on Salem's guilty head, when the accursed abomination all the holy place o'erspread? Friends of Jesus, they alone to Pella fled. I think we're all familiar with that hymn. 2 Peter 2, verse 4 says, "For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into the chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, the creature of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day in their unlawful deeds. The Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished."
Thank you, Brother Larry. We certainly appreciate your words and comments on pride. We certainly do live in a very sinful world. And as I said this morning, this is a great opportunity to remove ourselves from that world and to think on the things of the Lord. Tonight we'd like to close with hymn number 137. And following the hymn, will be dismissed by Brother Sam Tucker. Hark 10,000 voices, sing the song of Jubilee. Hail Emmanuel, great deliverer, hail Emmanuel, praise to thee. Hymn number 137.